This oral history is brought to you with the support of Guttman students and staff and funded by the American Council of Learned Societies and the Mellon Foundation. Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Donna. Can you please state your name and age, and do you give permission to the Brooklyn College?
My name is Alicia Wilson. I'm 40 years old, and yes, permission is granted.
The first question, where did you live before New York City?
I was born and raised in Mount Vernon, New York, the lower part of Westchester.
What were some reasons that you left?
Well, honestly, Mount Vernon is a small town, which benefited me as a child growing up, to be honest. A little more personal. Children were able to play in the street with each other. Cars looked out for us on purpose because they knew children would be there. But then as I started to get older, it really wasn't as many opportunities for an older person, like a 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old, someone that really wanted to explore. Mount Vernon was a little too small for me. And so I ended up moving on with my life and actually meeting my ex-husband and moved to New York City.
At what age did you leave?
I was 18 years old when I came to the city. Oh, man. Oh, I was young and lost, but very, very susceptible to what society was throwing at me. I was definitely willing to learn. Some things were probably learned the hard way, like the job. You know, like when it came down to having a couple of different jobs before I settled down with the workforce, you know, but it was just the fact that it was so many opportunities for me, especially someone that didn't go to college. And so it was amazing, to be honest. The city was so welcoming.
When you first came to the city, how did the community react? Did they like you or something like that?
Well, you know, if I can be honest with that, I was already taught that the city people were a little more rougher, a little tougher, a little more like bump you. And, you know, because it was so much hustle and bustle out there that I just already came into the city a little standoffish, but not in a bad way. More like I rather observe the life than to just go into it blindly as a Westchester girl or be too aggressive because of things that I've heard. So it was definitely welcoming because when you get out there, to be honest, everyone is hustling. And so you just find your groove. You just find your pace. You just do what works for you. And it was welcome. And like the bus, the train, it's crowded. People are still so close to each other that you can tell they are welcoming each other. When you move in closer on a bus or you move in closer on a train, it's your way of telling your fellow like commuters that you're welcome. And so, yeah, I do think that they were welcoming. I stayed.
From your time living in Harlem, what was one event that stood out?
Great question. Blackout of 2003. It was a blackout in August of 2003, and I was mature enough and old enough to remember everything about it. So it was a day like, you know, the whole city just started to get dark. I guess the easiest part about the blackout was that it became a blackout in the summertime of at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so we were already kind of warned that there was no lights. It's not like the blackout happened at 10 o'clock at night and everything just got pitch black. No, you were kind of preparing yourself already when you realized that it was a blackout. And so the day of the blackout, we decided to go over to Marcus Garvey Park, which is located on 124th Street in Mount Morris Park, and eat tuna and have a picnic kind of thing as the easiest way to have dinner. So we did that probably around 6 o'clock while it was still light. And then from there, it just got darker and darker. But that is definitely the thing that stood out to me. Once we were like, it was dark, we were in, we were safe. But yes, blackout, August 2003.
How would you compare when you first came to Harlem to now? You may want to include drugs, crime, or the new races coming in.
Okay, well, in Harlem, I have been here now for 15 years, and so I definitely believe that me working in Harlem now, I'm in the supermarket business and have been in the supermarket business. January will make 15 years, so I kind of got into the supermarket business right after coming to Harlem. And so definitely I can hit every subject. When it comes to the drugs, I started at the Pathmark on 125th Street, and that Pathmark, it was located on the corner of 125th and Lexington. It was surrounded by like methadone clinics and a lot of recovering drug addicts and a lot of relapsing drug addicts, because to be honest, that's a part of that life. And so it was very overwhelming in the morning. Like when you would go into work, they would be out there so early, and some hadn't went home at night. And then the others, like the crackheads, hadn't went home that night. But then the dope fiends had just came out, like they're fresh, they're showered, but they're nodding. Then as the years went on, when it came to drugs, that Pathmark ended up having, like, it went from dope fiends and crackheads to, by 2016, 2015, when Pathmark closed, it was K2 drug users. Like, the cops had to shut down a whole bunch of stuff down Lex, and so the drugs definitely got worse over there. And the fact that it shut down, I'm hoping that it is getting better. But the Pathmark on 145th and 8th Avenue, when I got transferred over to that one, it definitely didn't have as many drug users. You can see the drug users pretty much were just the thieves in the store, versus almost everybody over there was a drug user the way the 125th one was. So when it comes to drugs, I definitely think that as the years have gone on, that things have definitely got a little better, especially when it comes to the fact of them shutting down 125th, which was the worst store. And crime, so, well, what I will tell you is that the person who's interviewing me, Dorné, taught me something the other day that I didn't really realize. And so crime definitely was already at a steady when I came to Harlem. And so it wasn't at a high, because I came to Harlem in 03. So it wasn't at a high. It was probably, you know, we had been through the Giuliani, and, you know, it definitely was good for me, because I've heard some Harlem stories that I've missed, whether it's because of age or the fact that I wasn't in Harlem. But there's some Harlem stories that I've missed. And so when I got here, crime was at a steady, but it was not horrible. I definitely wasn't scared to go outside. I wasn't scared to raise my children and my child. Really, it was just Dorné at the time. I wasn't scared to raise her in the park. She actually went to the park every day. Like, there was not one day that I thought, oh, no, they might shoot up the park. No, it was already good. And then this weekend, we actually made history, because Dorné notified me that this was the first weekend in New York City history in years that had zero killings. And so you can tell from that right there how crime has gone. So I'm real thankful for that. And the races, well, I will tell you this. When I first got to Harlem, my little heart smiled being a Westchester girl, because I found myself never being surrounded by all black people. It was like in Westchester, we saw white people all the time, and it was nothing wrong with it. You know, it's the way I was raised. It worked out well for me. And then we had the Hispanics that would travel from a certain part of town on a bus, but we would all go to school together. You know, a couple of the you know, more like Arabic Muslim girls and maybe one or two African Muslim girls. But, you know, I had a real big variety in Westchester versus when I came to the city, because for me, my part of the city was Harlem. And so I would walk up 125th Street and there's 100 people on 125th, but 98 were Black. I like thought, whoa, this has got to be the life, because when you get 98 Black people out of 100, you got every complexion and height and weight and personality and different money. And it was amazing. I was amazed. And now, as the time goes on, you definitely do see a lot of other races. Like, you'll definitely see the Mexican mom walk up the street with her children. Like, you know, when I've seen a bunch of times, like, I know she's seen me a bunch of times. And, you know, I have a lot of mixed couples that I'll see now with their beautiful babies, and I'll get to know them and stuff. And, you know, I have the all white couples, and, you know, the chicks are like, hey, I'm new to the neighborhood. And, you know, I'm like introducing them to the supermarket business, because, like I said, I've been in it all these years. And so I've definitely seen the races change. I have to be honest, there's some good things that came with that, because you do need to broaden your horizon. And there are some people that don't really get a chance to leave where they are. Like, when I was growing up in Westchester, my whole world revolved around Westchester. I really didn't know what else was out there. It was like up to my parents to show me, because, you know, as children, that's all you know. And so when there's a child growing up in Harlem, I think that they might have a lot of opportunities, because now we have all types of cultures in Harlem. And so businesses are trying to please all types of cultures. And so these kids get to see that, and, you know, they can go for henna. Like, when my 10-year-old is like driving me crazy, I want to go for henna. I really never thought about henna growing up in Westchester, because, like, for me, the corner store or the corner stuff was penny candies, and it was more like a bodega that sold Kool-Aid to my mom, and it was a Chinese restaurant, and it was a liquor store. Now I do have the Chinese restaurant for my children, and they do have the liquor store, but then there's also the henna, and there's the threading of the eyebrows. These are other cultures. You got the African braiding shop. Like, growing up in Westchester, you would have to come to 125th to get your hair braided. Growing up in Harlem, there's like choices. Oh, I don't really like that one. Like, girl, I'm telling you, it's I think it's amazing.
Do you have any opinion on the U.S. government or the U.S. as a whole? Do you think it's changed over time? You may want to include the new president or the old president.
Well, I was born October 18th, 1978, and the president was Jimmy Carter. So I really wasn't as much into politics as I got, like, you know, honestly, I've been through Carter, and I've been through Reagan and the war on drugs, and I've been through a couple of presidents that really, they blurred by me. But my first president that I actually got to vote for was November of 1996. I got to go for Bill Clinton. William Clinton was the first president I voted for. I turned 18, October 18th, and growing up in my household, it was such a big thing that my mother would never really discuss with us, like, good things about the president that she was going to vote for or bad things about the opponent. But she was definitely like telling you, oh, I'm going for such and such. I'm going for such. And so my first year of going for a president was blindly following my mother going for Bill Clinton. And I have to be honest, this many years later, being 40 years old, turning 40 on October 18th, 2018, that it definitely makes me happy. I have no regrets with that. And I'm glad Bill was the first president, like, not only a president I got to vote for, but he definitely deserves a place in history in my heart with being the first president I voted for. So I can speak a little more about people like Bill Clinton and after. And me saying that is, Bill was the first one I voted for. The Bushes are absolutely my least favorite. Like, there's no competition. I really felt like a lot of things were done that I was a little more open to and didn't agree with. Like, I didn't like how greedy they were for oil. I just felt like America really has no place to punish other presidents like Saddam Hussein for doing things to his people when we have a whole bunch of history of our own. I just feel like it wasn't necessarily about that, because if you sit back and think about it, as an American, you have to be honest. We do have too much history of our own to get into that, but you have to also be honest with yourself, then why would we? And we would because of things like oil. And that makes me feel like we do things like be greedy. I don't like that. And so I don't like the Bushes. Ugh. Obama. Amazing. With two A's and a H. Amazing. Love Obama. Always loved him. To be honest, I the initial when we first were going with Obama in the preliminaries, I went for Hillary Clinton. And so when the majority went for Obama, I thought, okay, you know, Democrat to my heart. And I went for Obama. Really good decision. Love him and the whole family. Donald Trump, that's really hard for me, because I can tell you the truth about Donald. I always loved Donald Trump until he became my president. And so it's hard for me. I just felt like, well, why didn't he stay? You know, when someone's alive and you picture them a certain way, and then when they pass, you still choose to picture them a certain way because it's the person who that they were. I wish that Trump had just stood still in time with him being on Celebrity Apprentice and letting me enjoy him right there. So that's the most I'll say about Trump. I think America is foolish for voting for Trump. Or I think America is foolish for the lack thereof voting is how we ended up with Trump. So either way, we have to take responsibility for being foolish.
So another question that I have is, would you like to speak more on Reagan's war on drugs? I know you mentioned it earlier when he was explaining about the drugs and crime and the new races in Harlem.
Well, I don't really remember too much of life with drugs before Reagan, because like I said, I was born in 78. Reagan came around in like 84. And so I don't remember that, but I could speak about as an adult and after. I do agree with some parts and disagree with other parts. So the parts that I agree with is that hearing the stories of Harlem and how there were certain blocks that were shut down and stuff, if it wasn't for Reagan's war on drugs, how would it be? Would we still just be honestly committing war on each other? Because that was the option. You either commit war on each other and fight over the territory, or Reagan comes along and commits war on drugs, and you, who's you, aka the black man or the more minority man who's struggling and feeling like drugs is the only way out, but the way you are getting out is you are either selling your drugs to other African-American people in your community, or you are killing other African-American people in your community because you guys are going for the same spot, because nobody comes 100,000 miles to have your spot. No, it's y'all's spot. You probably grew up knowing each other and now are willing to kill each other just so that the living person can kill all the other people by selling them the drug. And so if it's a choice of that, I would probably prefer the streets to be cleaner like they are. But at the same time, there are some of his punishments were very harsh. And so he felt like, well, if I give this person 25 years for really doing something that he might deserve 10 years for, then everyone else will learn their lesson. But at the same time, who are you to give that person 25 years for something that you just said and that you know they really deserve 10 years for? I don't like that. You give them their 10 years. And so that's my problem with the law on the war on drugs. I don't really have a problem with a war on drugs. It's the law that goes with it, how harshly he punished them and how many of the young struggling black men were being punished because they were the ones that had the drugs in their hand and got caught with it. And so that's my take on that. But I don't really know about the war beforehand besides what I see on TV or what I hear through older people than myself.
Well, I would also like to mention 9/11, since that also affected the community. Where were you? What was your initial thoughts? And did it really affect you compared to other people?
So September 11th, 2001 was a Tuesday. I remember it clearly. I was home with a one-year-old and was really oblivious to the world at that point in my life because I wasn't working and my newborn baby was one and I was 22 and, you know, I was just learning to get into the life that I live now, but I was definitely at the beginning stage. She's 18 now at the time she was one. And so my ex-husband, the children's father, was working in a building as a painter. And he says to me, you know, my friend told me something just happened with a plane hitting. He goes, you know, and then we went upstairs to the roof. He goes, and you can see the building a little bit from here. We were in Brooklyn at the time. So he goes, cut on the TV. So I sat there and I cut on the TV. When I cut on the TV, the first plane had already hit, like I said, and so that's why everybody was watching now. But what we didn't know is that another plane was going to hit. And so when I watched the first, the building already have the hole in it from the first plane, I found myself thinking like, whoa, you know, more family. Because like I said, I was just at my beginning stage of family. And so I was definitely thinking family and feeling bad. Like, damn, you know, there's people trapped in that building. And gosh, I hope they get out. But I really honestly thought they would get out. I thought maybe a few people that the plane went. So if it went into like the 43rd floor, I thought maybe a few people from the 43rd floor might have died because what's the chance of the 43rd floor being empty when the plane hit? But I did not know at that moment that they were both going to fall and that they were both going to be hit. So when the second one got hit, it like clicked. Like, whoa, something just happened because now you're thinking this is not a mistake. And when you realize that it's not a mistake, now you actually start to tear up a little bit, get goosebumps, start to think about everybody close to you. And you realize that the buildings are falling now and that these people are definitely like gone forever. I didn't realize the effect that it would have on so many people down there with their lungs and stuff. But I did know that all of those people had already died right then and there. And I did feel a little angry because, like I said, I felt like America at times are greedy bullies. And so when somebody comes back and torture a group of Americans and kill a group of Americans, I kind of get angry with America, if I can be honest, because you can't be a bully and expect to win them all. And so you are admitting that, yes, I'm a bully, or you're doing bullyish things because these people that run America are smart, smart people. And so you know that it's bullying and you still don't think to yourself, what about the people that's going to hit back? And because it doesn't really affect them. But you see, the people for 9/11 was trying to affect them by doing things like hitting the Pentagon, because I'm thinking, why would you hit the World Trade Center? There's not really government people there. The truth is the World Trade Center was filled with people that worked for companies that was able to afford space in that building. That was the people that died in 9/11. It wasn't the government official that came in and decided to sign the paper for you to go and kill off their president or to go over there and take their oil. It was people that just thought they were doing well in life because they might have went to college and their job their corporation had a little more money and now they can afford a better space. And now these are the people that happen to be collateral damage. And so it made me kind of angry with America. And, you know, that's a lesson, I guess, that we all learned together.
On a non-political note, you've mentioned earlier that you work in the supermarket business. So how do you believe your presence in the community has shaped the community at all? Whether it's the relationships that you have with your coworkers or the relationships that you have with your customers that you see on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I think that we've both probably shaped each other, me and the community. I really got into the supermarket business to not have a job. That was it. I just didn't want to not have a job. Like, why did I not have a job? Okay, I need to be working. My firstborn and only child at the time was 3. What am I doing with myself? And so that's how I got into the business. What really got me interested in the business and wanting to stay in the business is when I realized that, one is, someone told me in my orientation back in January of 2004, the guy who did my orientation, he said, his name was Keith Jefferson. He's a friend of mine on Facebook now. He said, if you look around in this room right here, he goes, you know, it's like 9 or 10 of you guys in here. If you look around in this room at the end, it's only going to be like 1 or 2 of you guys standing. And you're going to look around and go, whoa, remember such and such, remember such. I didn't really know I would be 1 of the 2, but I knew I would be 1 of the 2. Like, so I already knew that I was hungry enough to keep the job. I did not know that I was hungry enough, determined enough, equipped enough to really dominate the business. And so it worked for me. And I believe it works for the community. I think it works well for them. I feel like I'm an African-American woman that is helping to run something that is in an African-American community that is being gentrified on a regular basis, on a daily basis, and to still see a sister in power that is not, I didn't sleep my way to the top. I didn't kiss enough behind to get to the top. I actually work hard. I really do a great job. And so when the community sees me at the top, it's like, oh, okay, good. You know, they do trust us. They do know that we good, that we do work hard. She does deserve this. And when they say things like that to me, it makes me feel amazing. And it makes me want to always make them feel like that. Like, I want them to always say, like, when they walk up to me and go, oh, my God, like, you know, I really like having you here, or, you know, I really like watching you work. There's some customers I haven't even seen before that will say, like, you know, I just want to tell you, great job. And I'd be like, thank you, which lets me know that they're watching. And to be honest, I'm watching them, too. I might be watching them for different reasons. I might be thinking, like, oh, you know, okay, they like that flavor. Or, you know, I might be thinking, is she going to watch her kid? Or I might be thinking, do you see that in your basket still? Or, you know, I might be thinking, really cute shoes, you know, but I'm watching. And so when they let me know that they're watching and that they're pleased, I am definitely pleased. So I think that we're both shaping each other. I'm getting to know the community. As I get older, I get to keep in contact with a lot of the younger. I watch some moms go from pregnant to like seeing 3-year-olds, and the whole time I'm steady growing older. And I think that it's amazing with the fact that me being a person that is doing well right here in our community is a great thing for my children. You know, they come in there like, you know, my mom is in here, and, you know, where's my mom? And I know my mom is in, you know I'm in there, they know I'm working, and they also know that their mom deserves the position too. So with that being said, I'm not worried when it comes down to when they get to the workforce. I'm not thinking that nobody's going to be in there kissing bottom, or no one's going to be in there sleeping around, that they already know what it takes to be successful. And so I love it. I love it.
Well, I know earlier you mentioned you being an African-American woman in the United States. So how do you believe that the state views you compared to the city, compared to Harlem? Do you need me to clarify?
No.
Okay.
The state's probably, well, you know, that was a really good question, because I was thinking as a whole, there's probably some states that would not give me the same opportunity that New York itself does. There's some cities that probably wouldn't give me the opportunity that New York City itself does. I think the fact that we are so much of a, mixed pot leaves less space for prejudice. And so when you are apart from other people, sometimes you can assume some prejudice things. You don't know better. And so you guess what the African-Americans are like. You guess what the Caribbeans are like. You guess, and sometimes you might be right and sometimes you might be wrong. But either way, it's not right to do. That's not your place. And so you do find yourself guessing what they're like in the city. With us being so close to each other and so different from each other and so much of the same with each other, we get to see that. We get to see that we are different in some ways. We get to see that we are the same in some ways. So with me in the supermarket business, that I will see that an African-American might pick up the same rice as a Hispanic. The difference is what we get to go with it. You know, so we do have some things that are the same, but then we do have some things that are different. And I think that the city definitely is a little more open to getting to know people for people. And so that works for me because I think I ended up on a better part of the spectrum when it comes to that. And so it works for me. They actually gave me a shot, but I actually deserved it. And so it works for me.
So you mentioned a lot about Harlem and the changes in Harlem and how your move to Harlem was very, I guess, essential for you to grow up. So this is coming to the end of the interview. Is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have asked that you would like the people to know about you? Just a quick summary about you or something like that?
I thought you did a great job. I believe a lot of the questions were asked and gave me a chance to cover them and answer them. I do appreciate the interview and just a hardworking mom who's just trying to make it. And that's it. And thank you and have a good one.
All right, thank you for taking the time out of your day to conduct this interview. I will send you a copy of this interview when it's finally finished and published.